I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Boy, we just heard Bassman play a little Barack Obama. I don't know about you, but every time he speaks, I can't stop smiling. I don't know what it is. It's a terrible thing. Not really. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the day after today. Last night, I'm sure all of you on whatever side of the political fence you were on in the United States of America were watching those election results and waiting to see what happened. And there was actually pandemonium in the streets of Baltimore and the streets all over the United States. People were banging pots and pans and screaming and singing. And in the streets of Baltimore, a friend of mine called from New York City and said that they held his cell phone out from this 14th story on 97th Street, and you could just hear the raucous behavior in the streets of New York. One of the young women at the party we were at last night, whose family's Ethiopian but lives in Tunis, in Tunisia, was saying her family was, people were dancing in the streets of Tunisia. They are dancing everywhere. So it's, we'll see. There's a great deal of hope that came out of this, and that the world, people around the world, we have, as I said to a friend of mine this morning, he said to me that there's we have an opportunity here in the world, in America, to reclaim our name in the world, and we'll see if that's true and where the future will bring us. We're going to talk about that with our guest this hour and with you. So call us with your reactions and thoughts at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. If you log on to steinershow.com right now, our website, I want you to take a look at a link we have to one of our guests today. She wrote an article. Sherilyn Eiffel did a special for Canadian Broadcast Company News, CBC News. We have a link there. It's called Tears, Joy, and Barack Obama's Victory. You can take a look at what she wrote, and we'll be talking about that and more this hour. She'll be here in just a few minutes, and Sherilyn Eiffel is stuck in traffic. There's a water main break on Cold Spring Lane, and it's a wonderful way to get here, but so she'll be here at any moment. I talked before we went on the air. And, of course, our other guest has been on our show before many times as well, Anne McCarthy, who is a former dean of the University of Baltimore School of Business and a former Republican candidate for controller in the state of Maryland. It's always a pleasure to have her with us. Anne, good to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
And, folks, you can be in the studio via phone, 410-319-8888. Or you can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts. I also wrote a blog on our website today about this election, and you can take a look at that and make your comments about that, too. We'll be hearing some parts of the acceptance speech by Barack Obama. You know, I think that even John McCain said it last night, Anne McCarthy, that no matter what side of the fence you were on, he calmed the boos down in his... In his speech last night, many people argue if he had started calming those boos down earlier in the campaign, he might not be in such a bad place now. But it was interesting. I mean, he and even President Bush kind of paid tribute to the legacy of what about how America's changing at this moment.
Mm-hmm. So did Condoleezza Rice this morning. Took a step out. Yes, I thought John McCain's speech was wonderful and gracious, a symbol of and reflection of the kind of person he really is. And Barack Obama's speech was also excellent and inspiring and a symbol of the person, reflection of the person that he is. And today we're all Americans. You know, I think it's a shame in some sense that we don't appreciate this every 4 years, that the day after Election Day, we should all be celebrating regardless of who won, because there is no military in the street. There's no current president who won't vacate the office. There's no, you know, overthrow of any kind of government. And we have a nice, wonderful, smooth transition of power. And we take it for granted.
And Sherilyn Eiffel has just walked in the studio. She made it through that traffic jam. Good
to
have you, Sherilyn.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you in the studio. So I was just talking about about waking up this morning, and all that's true. And I think something else is going on here that is palpable. I wrote this morning in my blog, and I've been thinking about this over and over again, is that America was born in a single breath with liberty and slavery in a single breath. And that's on our legacy. We have a dual legacy in this country. And I thought about it, and not saying McCain's for slavery, what I'm about to say, I'm going to be very clear what I'm saying here. But when I watched the crowds last night at the very end of the evening, and McCain's speech and then going to Obama and looking at the kind of club, the hotel, the Biltmore in Arizona, that's a very... expensive hotel and invited guests. And almost all the guests there were white, pretty much. And then the Barack Obama rally was in Grand Park, a public park. Mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of people of every hue and stripe and age that is America. That says, and then I started thinking about this notion of where we started as a nation with liberty and slavery in a single breath, Sherilyn.
Well, I don't know that we even have to go that far back. I think that, you know, I have to say, interestingly enough, the person who I think had the most kind of cogent analysis of this earlier today was Spike Lee on MSNBC. And what he said, with the same vision that you had, Mark, of looking at the two crowds, and we've been able to see that throughout the campaign, not just last night. If we look at the crowds that assembled for John McCain and for Sarah Palin as compared to the crowds that assembled to hear Barack Obama and Joe Biden, there was a huge difference between them. And what Spike Lee said was, he said, you know, the Republican Party is trapped in TV land. You know, he said, you know, father knows best, howdy doody. And he said that, you know, that America is over. And the unwillingness of the Republican Party to embrace the new America, which looks more like the rest of the world, is something that they're going to have to grapple with over the next few years. But that's what Barack Obama represents. And that's what America affirmed last night, I think, is the way forward. And, you know, I think when you look at the crowd, I think you're absolutely right to lay the class piece over it in terms of where the location of these two rallies, and what the Republicans thought they could win with, what John McCain thought he could win with in terms of his message, his presentation, his vice presidential nominee. It's as though that party is just resisting the call of reality and where we are right now in America and in the world.
I mean, after all,
people can finish a sentence.
Let me finish. I just got here. So I think that as the Republican Party regroups over the next few weeks and years, they're going to have to make a decision about the way forward. You know, the Democratic Party has a base, too. It doesn't get a whole lot of voice. It's a very liberal base, not liberal as the mainstream media talks about liberal, but really liberal. And the Democratic Party doesn't just play to that base because they know they can't win that way. The Democratic Party has had to recalibrate itself to be much more centrist than its base. And the Republican Party is going to have to do the same thing if it wants to survive and be in a position to wield power in the American political life.
Anne, go ahead. Anne McCarthy.
I would just like to point out that George W. Bush has the most diverse cabinet of any president, white president, so far, between Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and various other Hispanic and African-American appointees.
That was actually one of the ironies of the Bush presidency, because that's quite true that when you look at his cabinets, he had two, they were quite racially diverse in terms of the people that he appointed. And yet, in many ways, the atmospherics of that, the visuals of that, was knocked out by two things. One, by the war in Iraq, into which we were led on false information, with the president's insistence that this had to happen. Colin Powell, who I think is someone we don't have to feel sorry for, he can defend himself, but he was the sacrificial lamb. His integrity, his name in the world, the respect that he commanded in the world, was deployed on behalf of the Bush administration at the insistence of Bush and Cheney before the world to make the case for this war. And then secondly, you had Katrina. And no amount of window dressing in your cabinet could wipe out the image of black people on their roof looking for water, looking to be saved by the United States government, contrasted with, you know, the pictures of Bush saying, you know, you've done a heck of a job, Brownie. So that was pretty much canceled out, really, by the war in Iraq and certainly by Katrina.
Should we go to the phone list, Anne? 410-319-8888 to join in on our conversation here with Sherilyn Ifill and Anne McCarthy as we talk about the day after this election and reflecting on that. And I'm going to try to raise some issues here that are not necessarily overtly political, but have to do with the tenor of the land at the moment and talk a bit about that with you all and your thoughts on that and your thoughts on last night. As I said, you can log on to steinershow.com right now, and you can see the piece that Sherilyn Ifill wrote for the CBC News. It's linked there. And you can also see the blog that I wrote this morning. and links to other things around this election. 410-319-8888. Nita in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening. I just wanted to say that I almost hit the pole this morning driving to work 5 o'clock this morning because, I mean, tears were strolling down my face. I mean, I was boo-hooing, crying, and just being grateful to all of those who made this possible for us as humans, not just as Black Americans, because last night it just marked something in my heart that, you know what? What we saw across the camera, it is the face of America. There were all races, all creeds, all colors. It just all came together, and I'm just so grateful to be alive to even witness that, because there were so many. I said, oh, my God, do you know how many churches were burned just for this moment? How many people hung in trees? How much blood went in the ground just for this moment? Some people's children never made it home just for this moment. Just for this one moment to say that, you know what, no longer do I have to look at someone because of the color of their skin and say that, you know what, I don't think you can do that. You can't cut that. You can't make that. But the idea is, you know what, that doesn't count anymore. You have to look for something else now to discount people on because it doesn't count anymore. It doesn't work anymore. And I'm just so grateful for all of those who cried tears the years that I was never even born. I mean, I owe them. I mean, we all owe them. Those of us, I'm 42, mm-hmm. but I never had to deal with that. Those who cried the loudest and the hardest and prayed the hardest and the most, I think, were those who remembered the white-only signs on fountains and those who were chased home by dogs and those who were, I mean, we still have a level of it today, but come on. For me, I can't say that I owned that. I can't say that I felt that at that degree. I had no water hose turned on me. But because of those who did, I don't have to now. And I'm just so grateful. I just pray that the nation won't use this as something to be negative and worry about what wasn't done and what administration wasn't right and, oh, he was this and he was that. But you know what? It has proven that hatred does not work. Hatred does not work. And I'm so proud of all the people of color who did this peacefully. They rejoiced in a manner that's acceptable. And you know what? I think it's going to be okay. Not because of Barack, but because of the people want to make a difference. He can't do this alone.
Nita, thanks so much. You said a great deal in your time here with us on the air. And let me start with Sherilyn and go over to Anne McCarthy. Sherilyn, you wrote in your piece about some of what Nita was talking about, especially this legacy. And I loved it when you wrote about your daughters at the end of your piece, they won't experience this in the same way you do, mm-hmm. and what this means in the context of history.
Well, I think it's an interesting walk. You know, so many things were coming together for me as they were for Nita last night, thinking about my parents and thinking about the people who are really the history book heroes for me, the Fannie Lou Hamers and the Septima Clarks and the Shirley Chisholms and the people who really became idols for me, and thinking about my own children and thinking about my own life. I mean, I have to say that a lot was on the line for me last night. A lot was at stake for me in thinking about the choices that I've made in my life. I wanted to be a civil rights lawyer from the time I was a kid, and I became one, and I've devoted my life to that work even as I've gone on to teach full-time and I've done civil rights cases with my students and consistently tried to work on behalf of those who are underrepresented, and always with the belief that the law was there to change and transform our society to be its best, to live up to what it purports to be in its foundational documents. And that's sometimes a challenge, to be African American and to believe like that, because I've seen things even in cases that I've litigated that are not fair, that there's no other way to explain it than it's just not fair. And no amount of linguistic gymnastics or intellectual analysis can change that reality. So I've seen racism, I've seen unfairness. And so to hold on to that belief and to devote your life to it at great cost in many instances, at great cost financially, obviously it's not a very lucrative life, and at great cost, and even in terms of my personal life, I love my husband and my children, and over the years, I've sacrificed a lot of time away from them to do this work. So for me last night, there actually was a lot on the line. You know, it was about even just thinking about my own choices, thinking about the things that my father told me and instilled in me about really what I believe my role is in this world to try to make things better. Thinking about my parents as immigrants and the decision to come here and the belief about what better life could be here for their children. So there was a lot on the line for me. And so it was very emotional, but it was also just interesting also and emotional because my children have grown up in a different world, which is a blessing that they've grown up in a different world. Not a perfect world, but a different one than the one I grew up in, and certainly a different one than the one my parents grew up in. And what that means is two things. One is that it's better for them, which is what every parent wants for their children. The other thing is that I knew even as they celebrated last night, and my daughter who was, you know, who's at college was just crying and celebrating, and my two younger girls were enjoying our celebration, they couldn't really embrace the historic significance of what this means because they've never had to live that life or really even been really close to it. And as I said in the piece, in a world where they've grown up with, you know, tremendously successful African-Americans around them, their congressmen and judges and so forth, it's I'm sure, a huge stretch for them to imagine the magnitude of what this means to those of us who've had to really, you know, fight and push and have seen life another way.
I agree. It's true.
I want to go to the phone just for a minute to get a couple of callers in. And I want to kind of talk about two things that I think are, in some sense, to me, ephemeral. That you know, I'm trying to figure out how to concretize them about this election and this and what it might mean. But let me go first, 410-319-8888. I want to go to Michael Hughes next, who just called in. He is a journalist who was among the 16 people arrested in Charles Village last night.
I heard about this.
And hear a bit about what happened. Michael, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. So I heard about that first thing today from, we had a meeting today and ran into Dorian Bulger, who's the head of the Baltimore Museum of Art, whose son was among those who was picked up last night in that crowd of people. And she told me she spent the night at Central Booking trying to get her son and others out and then had to ferry them all home the next day. So talk a bit about what happened last night.
Yeah, well, I guess I have to first start with how, you know, tremendous a day it was for me personally. I work as an election judge, and, you know, seeing the community turn out and vote in unprecedented numbers, at least in my polling place, was so inspiring. And, you know, older folks who need to be helped in, and, you know, there was actually a woman from Sudan who flew back to Baltimore. Mm. She didn't want to absentee vote. She wanted to actually be there personally to vote. I mean, the whole day was just full of phenomenal little moments like that. And then, you know, so things were over, and I went home and got together with some friends, and we were watching, you know, we watched the speech in Chicago, and we were really just overwhelmed with just joy, you know, the kind of joy I've never felt in politics and in my life. And so, you know, we heard things going on out in the street, just spontaneous people honking and driving around. And the thing I can most closely compare it to was like when the Ravens won the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, it was exactly like that. I mean, just spontaneous people erupting into, you know, just, you know, yelling, but you know, not crazy. You know, it was very, you know, it was just very joyful. And so, you know, wandering around through the neighborhood, I live near Charles Village in Oakenshaw. Wandering around the neighborhood, we saw, you know, this mass of people in Charles Village. And I was wearing a Barack Obama shirt, one that I bought on Greenmount Avenue, and it's got a huge picture of Barack on the front. And as I walked towards the crowd, they were just they saw my shirt and were just cheering. You know, it was really, really cool to see that kind of outpouring. And overall, I mean, the thing was, it was a very civil crowd. You know, it was very unlike what you see after, you know, a college football mm-hmm. game when people are, you know, drunk and just, you know, going crazy. I mean, people had signs and flags, and they were, you know, just, you know, erupting in a song and cheering, and people would drive by honking their horns, and it was something, you know, I never really expected to see in my lifetime, you know, young people like that, so enthusiastic. And but at the upper part of St. Paul Street, the students hadn't really blocked anything off. The police had actually parked a lot of their vehicles, so essentially St. Paul was kind of closed down. But for the most part, you know, everything was really civil and fine, and you know, joyful and just celebratory.
Right, so what happened?
Yeah, well, all of a sudden, like a phalanx of police came marching down the street, and I've seen a couple bits of video on the Sun Paper side of it, and, you know, I was standing there, and I thought, oh, no, you know, I mean, I've been to anti-war demonstrations and things in the past, and just the feeling just changed completely, and initially, they were just telling people to stay off the streets, and for the most part, people were complying, you know, except for a few people would spill out into the street on occasion, that the students were listening, and they were staying out of the streets. And then I guess they just decided that everyone had to go home. So they started telling everyone to leave, and some of the students were a little upset that they were being told to leave. But all of a sudden, it just kind of erupted into chaos. And from what I could tell, they were just arresting people randomly for no good reason. I heard my brother, who was there, started running away. He said they just tasered somebody. And I thought, oh, my God. So I had my cell phone with me. I didn't have, you know, a notebook or anything. So I had my cell phone, and I just kind of stood on the side and watched as some people were being rounded up. And these were, you know, young kids, really, for the most part, being rounded up, handcuffed with the flexi cuffs, and put into the paddy wagon. So I stood on the side of the road because I wanted to, you know, make sure I wasn't doing anything wrong. And I was taking photos of the people being led into the paddy wagon, and an officer came up to me and stood in front of me, and I said, hey, you know, I'm a journalist, I'm just taking photos. And he slapped my cell phone out of my hand onto the street and grabbed me and said, okay, well, now you can write a really long story about this. And he grabbed me, spun me around, and another officer put the flexi cuffs on me, and they put me in the paddy wagon. And from there, they took us to some place that looked like a classroom. I don't know if it was over one of the other police headquarters or something. Mm-hmm. They put us at desks, and you know, there were three or four young women who were just crying, and you know, some of the officers seemed to be kind of enjoying that. I mean, but it was a mix of reactions from the officers. You could tell some of them were just thinking, you know, why are we doing this? You know, what is going on here? And
we only have an hour.
Okay, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. So basically, they took us to central booking, and you know, threw us in the cells. You know, let us make one phone call and wouldn't answer questions what we were arrested for. Earlier, the police had said that we could be arrested for inciting a riot, which I thought was outrageous. If anything, they incited the riot. And then they said, or hindering. So we were in there all night and fingerprinted, mugshots, everything. You know, and anyone who's ever been in central booking knows that's a horrific, humiliating, and degrading experience. And finally, they let us out today with absolutely no charges, and we all just sort of stood around outside when we were released and said, what are we going to do? You know, I've heard
some people are going to contact the ACLU to file suit. Is that correct?
Yes, the ACLU's been contacted. When I called them today, they were kind of meeting about it and discussing it. And, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, to go from such an extraordinary it's feeling
right,
to being dumped into jail for you know, 8 hours overnight. It was just, I mean, I'm still kind of reeling from it.
Michael Hughes, I stay in touch with us. I appreciate you calling in and telling us the story of what happened last night, and we will keep watching this and see what happens. And I hope you're okay now, correct?
Yeah, okay now. I could really use some sleep. But thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate being able to get the word out about
it. I appreciate you being part of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Hughes. Bye-bye.
Among the 16 arrests on the streets last night in Charles Village for celebrating the victory of Barack Obama, I want to say after we were celebrating my daughter's house, people stood outside because the electricity went dead in the whole neighborhood, so people were listening to the speech in their cars because they couldn't do it, watch the TV.
Oh, my gosh.
The police came around, and of course there were enough adults in our crew to say, okay, now just relax and go patrol somewhere and leave people alone.
But, you know, Mark, it's really interesting. I did an interview on ABC World News Tonight a month or so ago, and of course the interview lasted 25 minutes long, and I was on for 20 seconds, but part of the interview the reporter started to ask me a series of questions about the election day. He said, you know, African-Americans really have a lot of hopes pinned on Barack Obama. You know, he could be the first black president. There's a lot of expectation, you know, so what do you think will happen if he doesn't win? And I kind of clearly was not following his drift. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, there are all these expectations and a lot of young black people have registered and a lot of young black people are very involved. And what do you think is going to happen? And so, suddenly I caught it. I said, I get your drift. Your implication is somehow that some kind of violence is going to happen. And I said to him, I thought it was such a bizarre question to ask. I said, well, frankly, you know, if I were you, I'd be worried about the 20-something white kids who've taken out a year or two of their lives to work on the Barack campaign that I've seen in some of the offices, you know, that you might want to look at some of the older women who've decided to participate in this. I said, you know, America's on trial in this election. This is no referendum on what, you know, African-Americans are going to do. But I was kind of almost shocked by this rumor that was going around, and it made it onto some of the cable news shows as well, that, you know, we should fear what might be the backlash or the reaction of African-Americans if Barack Obama didn't win. It was just very, very odd. And maybe sentiment was what was driving this idea that people had to be on high alert, or the police felt they had to be on high alert last night.
But I sat in the studio several weeks ago with another commentator who said that if it was a closer race and it came down to the Electoral College deciding that McCain was the winner, we better be prepared for black people to take the streets. And he was African-American.
Well, I find that
it was shocking.
Can I tell you something though? I think that we would have to be prepared for people to take to the streets. I actually think that the truth is that if we were faced with a situation like 2000, I think that America would be shaken to its core, and you would not be able to differentiate who was the group that was on the street, because I think it would have really, really unraveled many people who just ramped their idealism back up after having felt quite devastated by 2000.
I personally wouldn't have thought anybody would have taken to the streets, so I was shocked to hear him say what he said.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, what do we mean by taken to the streets? Suppose people took to the streets and protested. That's a good thing, right? I mean, you know, taking to the streets doesn't...
peaceful protesting is great.
Right. I mean, taking to the streets doesn't necessarily have a negative connotation, although I think that was the implication.
Emily, before we go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888, and Bob and Kim and the others calling in, I want to get to your calls and also read emails from Jessica and Victoria that came in at steinershow@gmail.com as we talk with Sherrilyn Ifill and Ann McCarthy, reflecting on yesterday's election being over and Barack Obama winning. I want to talk about something that I think is a tenor of the moment that could happen with Barack Obama's victory, and see what you all think about this. There are a couple of things. Well, let me just hit, there are two specific ones. I'll get through one now, and if we get through the other one, that's fine. And that is, I was thinking about this, and I actually wrote about this morning as well, that during this election, there were a lot of, and I mean this in not trying to be partisan here, but just from my observations, there were a lot of mean-spirited attacks towards Barack Obama from the Republican Party, from some McCain-Palin ads, from people who supported a McCain's ticket, and saying some things were totally untrue about Barack Obama, association with terrorists, all the other things they were saying. And some people were on the left were, and people were progressives and people who supported Obama in general, no matter who they were politically, saying, Barack, you should fight back. You got to punch him in the eye, spit in their face. You got to come out swinging. You can't just lay back like this. And what I was thinking was that what was going on here is that Barack Obama was picking up on something that came out of the civil rights movement. He picked up on a spirit of nonviolent power, and walking with his head high, holding morals and ethics in place, and walking straight into it without returning that kind of volley of fire. And there was a tenor you could feel. Valerie came home. Does that mean we have to take a break in the middle of this? Okay, take a break and we'll come back.
Can I just say I agree?
410-319-8888. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and I'm sitting here this hour with Sherrilyn Ifill, who is a professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, author of the book On the Courthouse Lawn. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Confronting the Legacy of Lynching in the 21st Century. I'm sorry, Sherrilyn. Ann McCarthy, former dean at the University of Baltimore School of Business and a former Republican candidate for comptroller in Maryland. We're talking about the day after 319-88-88 is our number here. Join us with your thoughts and comments. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. I want to get right back to the phones to Davida, Kim, and John who called in, but I want to finish what I was saying. I'll make it fast. We can get into it, which is the tenor, I was saying, of America. It could wrestle with some things we weren't before. One of the things that happened was the day of the Manassas rally, the last day of the campaign, the police weren't prepared. And there were tens of thousands of people coming out of that place, walking at a snail's pace, literally shoulder to shoulder, back to front, front to back, couldn't move. And young hip-hopsters, older white women, every other human being from America was represented in that crowd. And everybody was sweet, kind, polite. Nobody panicked. Everybody was calm. It could have been a situation where people lost, and they didn't. The same exact thing happened when we came out of Invesco in Denver. I was thinking about this, that this is a tenor in some ways that I think Barack Obama is setting for his campaign. And I think it's going to set for America in terms of the kind of civil discourse that we can expect coming out of this new administration.
Oh, I would agree. Actually, both of these men ended up with very high positives, which is unusual compared to other past presidential elections. And it's not as... You know, recency, we have this recency effect. We always think that this election is the worst. But really, when you look back, there have been some really bad, nasty, mean-spirited elections. And the polling is that people think highly still of McCain, and they think very highly of Obama. And that's a good thing. And while it's sad, it's unfortunate, some of those negative ads that were nasty and mean-spirited, John McCain, at least in his rallies, would say, stop booing or don't say that. He's a good person. We're not going to go there. And I think both of them did that fairly well. And I'm proud of them for doing that.
Sherilyn, then we'll open the phones here again.
Well, I think John McCain gave some mixed messages. Sometimes he said it, sometimes he didn't. And he certainly didn't direct his running mate to do the same. But I do think you're right, Mark, about the discipline of the Obama candidacy has set a kind of example for how to proceed. It was funny that when you were talking about, you know, the civil rights movement, I was thinking, keep your eyes on the prize, oh Lord. You know, the focus, Barack did not permit himself to be distracted by a lot of this stuff that could have pulled him off message. And I think that's going to be the way that he governs. You know, that he's not going to respond to every insult that's out there. He's not going to respond to every attempt to pull him off message. Now, it can get really ugly, as we know from the Clinton presidency. I mean, in many ways, Clinton was beset by so many distractions. I mean, once they got the Whitewater investigation going, there was, you know, a 24-hour distraction, essentially, for him that made governing very difficult. But I think that Barack's not going to have that because I think of his sense of integrity. But I also think because he's really going to be focused. That's the way he's run his campaign. That's the way he insists that the people who work with him operate. And I do think it's setting an example for us to get out of the troubles that we're in, economic, security, and so forth. You know, unsuccessful war on two fronts. All of the threats that are out there, educational system a mess and so forth. It's going to require a level of discipline, and we just can't get distracted by the same old conversations, the same old arguments, the same old flames that set us off at each other's throats if we intend to get out of it.
Well, the other thing is that unlike Clinton, Senator Obama has won the majority of the vote. President Clinton never did. So he never had the support that I think President-elect Obama is going to have going into his administration.
It's funny. I actually think that's accountable to something quite different, and I think this is going to be a huge piece of Obama's power. Because of the tremendous organizing that he did in this campaign, because, you know, you get three or four emails from him every day if you're one of his supporters, he's got a direct communication with the electorate that I think is going to be extremely useful to him. I think we're going to get emails from the President of the United States. You know, I think that's going to happen. And I think that people in Congress, knowing that he's got that power, that he's got the bypass power to go directly to those people, and by the way, go directly to those people for fundraising as well, and any congressperson who wants in on that list, right, who wants a piece of that, had better go with the program, had better be supportive of their president. That's a huge power for him to have in his pocket. It's not just winning the popular vote or winning, the, you know, resoundingly, but how he won. He didn't win because, you know, he had all the best, you know, all the richest people in the world on his side. He had a lot of those, too. But because he has a direct connection with millions of people in the electorate, millions of low-stakes people in terms of money, but high-stakes people in terms of what really enables you to push your agenda forward and to put that pressure on Congress by being able to go directly to the people. And we haven't seen a president with that kind of power yet. That's part of the power that's come out of the new tech.
Yeah.
That's part of the power that's come out of the new technology, right? Because, and that's what I think that we have to factor that in, that ability to speak and communicate instantly with the electorate, without a news conference, without a fireside chat,
right.
To just go right there. We're going to have to really see how that plays out.
I think we're going to see that, and this also has to do with being an organizer, I think, and the notion of being a community organizer and how that works. It was much maligned during the campaign, but I think that it's the rock upon which
we've seen it at its best. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones here. We're talking to Shirley Knightley and Ann McCarthy about the election, the victory of Barack Obama. Your thoughts at 410-319-8888. And let me read Jessica's email, and then we'll go right to Kim, DeVita, John, in that order. 1, 2, 3, get them on the air here. I saw the same kind of exuberance in Mount Vernon for mostly white young people. Groups of about 7 to 15 people. It was awesome. I'm 26, and apathy and cynicism is our cultural currency, but not last night. Last night, people were joyous and genuine, and it was kind of revolutionary. People were loud but well-behaved. At one point, a cop drove by, and some revelers shouted, "Yes, we can, officer," but the cop just sort of shook his head and drove away. 410-319-8888. And Kim in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, is this me?
Yes, Kim. Kim, you're on the air, yes.
Hi, this is Kim Jensen calling. It's great to hear Sherilyn and Mark on the air.
Hi, Kim.
Yeah,
and hi to Anne as well.
Hi, Kim.
I wanted to just make a couple of comments and maybe a question. I, too, was in tears as I cast my vote yesterday. It was very emotional, and I wanted to say that my actual political views are closer to Cynthia McKinney and Ralph Nader. And yet, I really pushed that button for Barack Obama because I really wanted to be part of that historical moment. I wanted to be part of kicking the Republicans out of the White House and really moving forward with a progressive agenda. And so I was proud and thrilled to be able to vote for Barack Obama. But the tension is there, though, about how do we make sure that this progressive agenda keeps carrying forward, and do you think that's going to be an issue, and what we can do to make sure that the things that we care about, you know, that we become a freer country and that we do move forward on the environment and education and the Middle East. The Middle East was one issue that I was more in agreement with Cynthia McKinney and Ralph Nader on. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that, and thank you so much for this discussion. It's very exciting.
Mr. Sherilyn, first, just as an add-on to what you said, Kim, that among the polling and studies I've seen among both Israelis and Palestinians in this election, the American election, which they could not vote in unless they were American citizens as well, obviously, the majority of both Israelis and Palestinians were for Barack Obama, which I found very interesting. That we'll see what that sets up.
Well,
Kim
raises an excellent point, you know, and I've actually disciplined myself to enjoy this moment, you know, and to say we have a right to celebrate. But the reality is, you know, many of my views are to the left of Barack. Also, he's a very pragmatic politician. It's a quality I appreciate tremendously. It doesn't change, you know, what the job is of those of us who fall to the left of many of his views. He's going to be getting a lot of push from the right. I think he tends to be more center. There's some things that he's more progressive on. But, you know, we all have our job to do, wherever you fall on the political spectrum. And if you're a supporter of Barack, and I'm a supporter of him, but I don't agree with him on everything, I do think that it's my job always to keep any leader's feet to the fire in terms of being attentive to the communities that I represent. And I regard that as my job. I think there's a respectful way to do it. I think there's a way to do it and to recognize our commonalities, of which, you know, I share many with President-elect Obama. But I also think that, you know, sometimes people worry, you know, we have to remember that, you know, when I was driving in here, even today, when I, you know, I was up late last night and I went into my office and it was downtown Baltimore and right across from the VA hospital, and it looked the same. The same, you know, men were on the street you know, who were homeless. The same men were on the street who clearly needed some kind of mental health medication who didn't have it. You know, the ladies who work in the building and clean up our offices, we're still doing what they do. The reality, Baltimore, you know, last night someone was saying to me, you know, I hope we have a 24-hour moratorium on killings. That would have been nice. You know, so we've still got all the same problems. We hopefully, and I believe we do, we have a leader who I think we can work with to help and who's, you know, genuinely got the skills to help push forward with some of those problems. We don't have to always agree on precisely the dimensions of the solution. And where we can, we should be pushing him. We should be pushing him. So I welcome it. I think he's not afraid of it. And that's what I think is so exciting about his candidacy. He's smart enough not to be afraid of other smart people with good ideas. And in that sense, he's not an ideologue. And that's exciting.
That's really everything you said was really important. But the last couple of things you said, I think, really have to think about. People have to think about his intelligence and his lack of fear of intelligent people and wanting to hear a spectrum of ideas in a debate and conversation. Mm-hmm. And Anne, I wonder what you think about that. I mean, you are a Republican and a very open-minded human being in the way you think. And you are probably more conservative than Barack Obama. In many of your thoughts, maybe not. I don't know. I can't put words in your mouth. I don't know that much about you, but so I want you. What are your thoughts in that direction? I mean, because you.
I actually agree with Sherilyn in the sense that, truthfully, I'm conservative in a fiscal sense,
yes.
And unfortunately for the Republican Party, they lost that. It's not even, you know, they became the party of cutting taxes. That's not Republicans. The party of Republicans is, you know, efficient. Somewhat smaller government, but more importantly, you know, not increasing the tax burden or being responsible financially. We lost that. We also lost, as far as I'm concerned, the tradition of Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln. They were progressives. They were social progressives. Now the Republican Party has been pulled so far to the right by the evangelical conservatives that I almost don't feel like I belong in the party anymore, because I believe in civil rights for gay couples. I believe in the freedom of choice for women who are facing whether or not they want to end an abortion. Would I do that? No. But that's a different issue. And
that's a really important point you just made. Would you do that? No, but as a matter of law and right, it's a different question.
Right, because right, I think exactly. When we go into the voting booth, we should be, above all else, secularists. We should separate church and state.
410-319-8888, your thoughts on yesterday's election. And let us now go to, I'm going to take these in order, people who called in. So John, Davida, Bobby, in that order. John, and I think it's John Cardin, who's Delegate John Cardin on the phone. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good to hear from you. I'm well.
Great. Listen, there's so much you guys have talked about that's fodder for conversation. I'm looking forward to a much longer discussion over the next few weeks and maybe months on all these things. But
me
I just
too.
Wanted to ask you, your guests, a couple of a question regarding race, because I really think it's an important issue. On Saturday morning, I have a basketball league and I play with some friends, and I had two of my very close white friends come to me when I was wearing my Obama t-shirt when we were playing ball and said, "You're not really going to vote for that guy, are you?"
Really?
And I said, "Not only am I, but I'm going to make sure that you guys do too." and they rattled off a couple of things that to me were very, it was a fear of the unknown, really. It was a very, I don't know how to describe it, except that there was definitely a racial tone to their problems. And I'm wondering if your guests would respond to how you think, or whether you think that Obama should, and how he would react to this backlash he's going to get from white America that may be a little bit nervous, and then how he's going to deal with that, or whether he should deal with that at all.
Really good question. Sherilyn, you want to grab first and we'll go to Anne? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Well, I think that, John, that's a great question, and how are you? You know, those of us who've been raised in an integrated world, as I have on many occasions in our life had to quell the instinctive nervousness of whites who are not used to being around black people and who, you know, come to the table with some preconceived notions. How do you undermine that nervousness? I think Barack is well schooled in this. I think we should remember that his background as someone whose mother was white and who was raised by his white grandparents has given him a skill set that I think is actually quite useful. But I think it's one that those of us who've been raised in an integrative environment almost do instinctively. And that is by doing the job. I think this is Barack's instinct. I don't think Barack is going to have a speech or a conversation in which he says, here's why you shouldn't worry about me. I think what he's going to do is start fixing problems, and he's going to do it in a way that shows that he's not afraid to include other voices at the table. I think he's going to create a very inclusive administration, and people are going to see that. So the visuals of it and the feel of it are going to be that he's not excluding people. And then I think what he's going to need to do, and I think he's going to do this in the first 6 months, is he's going to need to make some steps, probably on the economy, that begins to turn some things around fairly quickly and decisively. And I really think what Americans want right now is decisiveness, but decisiveness not of the kind that we've seen under the Bush administration. Decisiveness that's the result of deliberation and thought with all the viewpoints represented at the table. And there's nothing that beats doing the job to undermine, you know, the right. nervousness of whites when they see blacks in positions of authority. You do the job and you do it well, and it compels people to respond to you as a human being. And I think that's what Barack Obama's going to do and has been doing. I actually think that's been the success of his campaign as we watch the support. Remember all the Hillary voters who, you know, never were going to vote for Barack? You know, I think he's done that, and I think he'll do that as president as well.
I would just remind us of our history, which is, and I would agree sort of with Sherilyn, that we had a president who did this once, which was John F. Kennedy had to address the fact while he was campaigning that he was Roman Catholic, right. and the fear of the country that the Pope would be ruling the United States from Rome. I mean, it was a real fear. We laugh at it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can't believe it. But he had to not only address it, yeah. just like Obama had to address the race issue, mm-hmm. but then when he was in office, he had to undertake actions that made it clear that he That's was right. the president of the United States, mm-hmm. not the Pope. And
Absolutely.
And Senator Obama is perfectly capable of doing these things.
Thank you so much for that call, John, and we'll be talking Thanks. Very soon.
Great,
Thank you. 410-319-8888 DeVita in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Mark, first I just want to say that I'm really glad that you're on WEAA.
Me too.
And to your guests, I've really been enjoying the very interesting and engaging conversation. I just wanted to throw out a comment that I'm very excited about Barack being the president-elect because he brings a refreshing concept of power. There was an article written about him in the Utney Reader a couple months ago, and it was titled "The Power of Nice."
Oh, I read that. Yep.
Yeah. And that came to mind as you were describing how he's really embodying the concepts of the civil rights movement. Just, you know, strong character, being very deliberate, being very focused, and I'm just so excited about his victory. Very excited.
Tavita, thanks so much.
Well, you remember the mantra of the campaign internally, the Barack campaign, is no drama, right? That's their tagline. So, mm-hmm. you know, there is a way in which they've been wearing power very lightly. And a number of people who've, you know, been on the inside to do interviews and so forth have talked about how, you know, just how nice he comes off, how relaxed he is. And I think that's important for people to see also. And I actually for him as an African-American candidate, it's actually critically important.
I think you saw that also in his way he ran the campaign mm-hmm. when he was losing to Hillary for a while and it was very tense.
Yeah.
People were yelling at Barack Obama, let Axelrod go, let these people go, you've got to have a new campaign staff. And he said, no, I started with these people, mm-hmm. we're going to see this through together to the mm-hmm. end. And he didn't, unlike other campaigns, mm-hmm. people didn't get mm-hmm. let go except maybe one person who was, I forget the woman's name. Samantha Powers, who's really a very brilliant woman.
She is brilliant.
But made a comment that put the campaign in jeopardy in terms mm-hmm. of foreign policy stuff, at least from their perspective, and she resigned. Mm-hmm. But other than that,
mm-hmm. yeah,
he was steady. He kept it going. I think it's a really, that I hope that'll be the quality of this administration.
You know, it's funny, we talk about judicial temperament. It's interesting to think about presidential temperament, because I actually think that played out in this election. I think people were a little spooked by John McCain's temperament, and I think that Barack Obama's sense of calm was very attractive to people.
Let me go back to the phone and say this. I'm going to go to Denise in Baltimore. Has a comment about reaction to black Republicans I'd like to hear. Denise, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I was all throughout the, you know, the election, the campaign rather, I kept asking my friends, especially like my male friends, if when I would hear some of the black GOPs, for example, like I think he's on Fox and also an NPR commentator, Juan, I think is Williams.
Juan
is his
Williams.
Name. Right, and some of the other black GOPs, and even like Lynn Swan, and of course our own Michael Steele.
Indeed.
When I was listening to them, you know, talk about their support of McCain and what have you, I was really wondering, I was asking deep down inside, you know, will they be, you know, will they feel proud if Barack Obama becomes president? What will their reactions be? So last night, as soon as it was announced that Barack Obama was going to be the president of the United States, I immediately flipped on the Fox.
And I
Juan,
did too.
Because of course I immediately flipped. I want to see how they're going to, you know, how they're going to report on this. And Juan Williams was speaking with Brent Hume, mm-hmm. and you could actually hear his voice. And
he
this
choked
got
up.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
I started crying. He choked up. Mm-hmm. And he said something to the effect of, you know, despite, you know, your political beliefs or preferences, this is history.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept talking, and his voice cracked. And mm-hmm. I was just wondering, what is Michael Steele thinking right now? You know, what is Lynn Swan thinking right now?
Probably the same thing.
It was just the feeling. I just wanted to share that.
Denise, thanks so much. That's an interesting comment.
You know, clearly I'm not African American, but I have to say, and I adore John McCain. I always have. I wish he had defeated George W. Bush in the primaries in 2000. That was the John McCain that should have been elected. But as much as I believe in John McCain as a human being and what he's done for this country, last night was wonderful.
Yeah.
Regardless of my politics, it was a wonderful day in the life of America.
I think it's kind of funny that knowing Juan Williams, when people think he's a Republican, that's pretty...
Well, he's become quite something on Fox.
He has. Actually. I've noticed that.
That's all I'll say. Now, Michael Steele, you'll recall, Michael, Mark, that Michael Steele and I did your show on another network that will not be named the day that the Supreme Court ended the recount.
That's right. I
still have the tape.
I have the
if
tape.
If you ever really want to do an interesting show, have me and Michael back on. Let's play portions of the tape in terms of our predictions of what was going to happen with President Bush.
If he will come, that would be great. Ann McCarthy and Sheila Life, I wish you had more time.
He's another Fox guy now.
I appreciate you both being part of the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, I have to say, I appreciate the fact that you provide a forum where people can have honest and open discussions
yeah.
and not yell at each other.
Yeah, it's
thank
fun.
You. Thank
Thanks,
you,
Mark.
It's good.
Thanks,
good to have you both with us. Let me just say that Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information on personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered this hour by Brian Boone. Our intern is Judith Lloyd. Theme music by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows and additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.